Hi, I'm Tiffany. Welcome to the 12 Days of Tomfoolery. It is now day and part 8.
Yay, part 8. Hi, guys.
Hi.
So we are moving into the 8th house, the second of our water houses. All the water houses are very mysterious places. And the 8th house is no different, perhaps the mysterious of them all. It is traditionally ruled by Scorpio. It rules over a lot of things. It rules over the occult. It rules over astrology. It rules over mysticism. It rules over death, both like actual death and transformations, more so the transformation, the little deaths we go through in life to transform. And also, while the 5th house is like fun, flirty partnership and kind of sex, and then the 7th house is marriage and signing a contract. The 8th house is kind of where a marriage is supposed to go. It's not, it doesn't always go that way, but the 8th house is like a very deep, intimate relationship with somebody. It could go one of two ways, 8th house sinistry or people's stuff falling into your 8th house or things happening in your 8th house, can either be very, very passionate and, really create a connection that's kind of impossible to break, kind of like two souls, not merging, but like very, very deep partnerships, or it can be obsessions, where people, where it's a bad kind of thing. It shows up a lot in like serial killer charts and stuff, but it's also like the Notebook relationship is brought up a lot in 8th house too. So it can go, no, it's true.
The duality.
It's true. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's Scorpio. Scorpio goes really deep and Scorpio can be really positive and Scorpio can be really negative. So it's like the shadow side and the light side. So a lot of stuff happens. In the 8th house. It's also the hidden house. So like affairs fall in there, or even if it's not an affair, like relationships that you don't necessarily want other people to know about for whatever reason that is. It can be for nefarious reasons. It can be for that it's so intimate that you don't want to share it with other people, but very like secretive house. So what do you got for us, Tiffany?
So in the tradition of Christmas, I know we all have our own little traditions, but one of the main ones is stories. Yeah. one of the main ones is stories we tell, Christmas tales, different things that have always stuck with you for a long time. So I took this snippet from a little article because I thought it was cute. December, more than any other month of the year, is a time to look back and see how far we've come and to gather ourselves together before we go any further. This is part of the true meaning of Christmas. We gather ourselves together to remember, to commemorate, and to celebrate. The stories we tell are the gifts we give to each other and to ourselves. Christmas, then, is about showing the love that is felt all year in the bleak midwinter as the frosty winds blow and the earth stands still and cold. Sometimes the best Christmas stories tell of troubles and strife and things to be set right as the world turns towards deepest darkness. Sometimes the best stories are the stories with no happy endings because nothing that matters, like love and hope and kindness, ever really ends. One Christmas is very much like the next, like the last. It's the stories that make Christmas because it's Christmas that makes memories. That's what stories are, memories we tell each other over and over again.
Aww,
I just thought that was, I don't know, it was very concise, but I thought that was a great way of like summarizing all the stories we tell. And I thought it was really pretty.
It is. And it's actually very 8th house-ian because, as I said, the death is, while it can be literal death, is like, we never really die, right? We go through these little
metamorphosis
in a more spiritual context, you know, like our human body dies, but our spirit goes on. But even through life, like, you think back, like I'm a completely different person than I was even 2 years ago, but definitely 10 years ago.
Oh, definitely two years ago.
But, and it is a continuous stream. Like we're not ending, but there certainly are endings, right? We certainly do become different people, but we're still the same continuous thing. That is just a really great 8th house-ian kind of thing. And it warms my heart. So thank you.
No, I really liked it. And I thought it was a good way to segue into one of my personal favorite stories of transformation of the heart, The Grinch, which you mentioned an episode or so back. So
yes,
it is absolutely him projecting and then trying to push himself through to the lighter side. So we're going to talk about our boy, Dr. Seuss. I'm not going to go over his whole life. We're just going to talk about, I know, specifically the Grinch, and it's just going to be a quick little fun thing. Well, meh. The first use of the word Grinch in a work by Dr. Seuss appears in the 1953 book Scrambled Egg Super, one of the books withdrawn from circulation by Seuss Estate in 2021. So hope no one missed out. About Peter T. Hopper, a boy who collects eggs from a number of exotic birds to make scrambled eggs. One of these exotic birds is, pray for me now, beagle-beaked, bald-headed Grinch, who shares the, I know, Lord, I didn't think I was going to make it, who shares the later Grinch's cantankerous attitude. Cantankerous is one way of putting it. The name later appeared in May of 1955 issue of Red Book in a 32-line poem called The Hubbub and the Grinch.
Hubbub?
It's H-O-O-B-U-B.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. This version bears virtually no resemblance to the later character other than name, instead being a fast-talking salesman in the vein of the Sylvester McMonkey McBeam from the Sneetches and the Onceler from the Seuss's later books, The Lorax. The Hubbub and the Grinch would be republished as part of the posthumous anthology Horton and the Quaggerbug and More Lost Stories in 2014. Whew, I hope I'm done with those.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to Virgo you. This just occurred to me. Was Grinch a word, like, was that the first time Seuss used it, or did Seuss create the entire concept of the Grinch? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I think it's going to probably have its own etymology, and I didn't look that up, but we can go
He made up, like, no, just because, like, lots of people, you know, make stuff up, and then it becomes part of the vernacular. So I was just wondering if we say Grinch after the Grinch, or if the Grinch was named because Grinch was already ordered.
Well, wait no longer, because we're about to find out right now. You ready?
Fantastic. I'm ready.
Definitions from Oxford Language. Grinch, origin, how the Grinch stole Christmas, 1960s. Oh,
perfect. Great. So he coined it.
So he did coin it. Now Love we it. Know.
Yeah, the more you know.
Well, I'm just glad I'm not reading all of his book titles anymore, because those are a mouthful.
Yeah,
so the Grinch is best known incarnation made his book debut in the 1957 story, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, written and illustrated by Dr. Seuss, published by Random House. In the 1966, the story was adapted into an animated film of the same name. Your mean one, Mr. Grinch, is Boris Karloff, who serves both story's narrator and the voice of the Grinch. I thought that was fun, so I didn't want to leave it out.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow. Boris Karloff. That's amazing.
I know. I was like, oh, spicy. I love it. Yeah. In 77, Seuss responded to the fan request for more Grinch tales by writing Halloween is Grinch Night.
The Grinch was hot.
In 2000, he was hot. Mm-hmm. Look at these big names, though. The feature musical comedy film based on the story was directed by Ron Howard and starred Jim Carrey. And I was drugged to that as a child, but I actually ended up liking it.
Wait, that movie didn't come out when we were kids, did it? The Grinch?
No, but I was still drugged there. I was in high school.
Oh, yeah. I knew Ron Howard was the narrator. I did know that.
Yeah, it was in 2000, so I was like 12, 13, or 13 at Christmas time.
I was 16 or 17. That's so weird. I would have guessed that it came out like 10 years ago. That's crazy.
I remember being high schoolish at the time. I knew that much. I didn't know how young I was, but yeah, apparently it was 2000.
Wow, God, I'm so old. I cannot believe that movie came out 22 years ago. Holy shit. Wow. Okay.
But anyway, back to the bread and butter, how he came up with the Grinch. So he had just finished writing Cat in the Hat in 57. His wife, Helen Palmer, had some ongoing medical problems and suffered a small stroke in April of 1957. So nevertheless, he acted as an unofficial editor, as she had with previous Dr. Seuss books. Dr. Seuss claimed he was the inspiration for the character, as his wife's health problems and his dismay with the commercialization of Christmas made him feel more or very Grinchish, as he looked into the mirror one year on December 26th. Then Dr. Seuss wrote the book quickly and was mostly finished within a few weeks, but he pinned a lot of it on the 26th. Biographers.
Oh, one day.
Yeah. He just, I guess he was like, wow, I'm sick of this bullshit, and just went off. Just went off on the paper. which, relatable.
Can you imagine that? Like, yeah. Yeah. Tiffany and I are both in very cranky moods today. So sorry if
we're dancing the ledge.
Yeah, before we get on, we were both like, we're about to have meltdowns. Like, I'm fucking walking on a tight wire. Which, we just paused the recording for a second. And I was like, this is so appropriate that it's happening while we're in the eighth house, Scorpio. Because this is very, like, this, like, tense, tight, like, angry, like, energy is very Scorpio. And the moon is in Scorpio in a last quarter moon. So it all adds up to this kind of a, this kind of a feel that we've
and,
got going
just
on.
Just my personal feminine rage is also in Scorpio, because I'm ready to burn it down.
Yeah. So is mine. So is mine. Oh, both God. Of us. The dark feminine is out to play. And Saturn
is here.
Saturn is sitting directly on my black Lilith right now. And has been for a couple of weeks and will continue to. So I'm a seething ball of rage. And Saturn is like, you got to keep it together. You gotta calm this down. But instead, it's getting worse. So anyway, we're angsty. It's the eighth house. So sorry about that. Yeah, we both are.
You better like and share this one or else.
Yeah. You're going to transform one way or the other. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So anyway, totally vibing with Dr. Seuss's Grinchy energy.
Right.
Just,
me too.
Don't even question it, personally. So Dr. Seuss wrote the book quickly and was mostly finished with it within a few weeks. Biographers Judith and Neil Morgan wrote, it was the easiest book of his career to write, except for its conclusion. And according to Seuss, I got hung up getting the Grinch out of the mess. I got into a situation where I sounded like a second-rate preacher or some biblical truism. Finally, in desperation, without even making any statement whatsoever, I showed the Grinch and the Who's together at the table and made a pun of the Grinch carving the roast beast. I had gone through thousands of religious choices, and then after 3 months, it came out like that.
At the end of the Grinch, right, he does, like, become happy. Isn't that what I haven't seen it in so long?
So, I mean, I haven't seen it in a little while, but he basically is just, I mean, to be fair though, and I read this in a tweet, not to take away from it, but I'd be a little fucking cranky too if everyone in town sang songs about how shitty I was all the time.
Yeah.
So totally. I don't know. Not very nice.
Totally. But in the Christmas. End, it is a redemption story, isn't it? Like in the
it
end,
is a redemption story because he goes and steals all the toys, and it's like reverse Santa. He's got to make it all in one night. It's all this craziness. He steals everything, the bulbs, the tree, the forks, the plates, the dog's rug, you know, just it's all gone. Anything you can think of. He's like, fuck that. I'm taking it. So
Grinch 100% Scorpio.
Right. 100%. The next day they still get up and go out and sing around the tree and talk about their love and their gratefulness and stuff, even though they have nothing. They don't cry and complain. So when he sees that, it takes him over the edge, and that's when his heart grows 3 times.
Oh, see,
and then
and
he slides down the hill, Whoville Mountain, and rolls in and starts throwing all the gifts out. And then at the end, it shows him carving the roast beast as he sits with everyone to have a large Christmas feast.
Oh, see, I love that. And there's the light side of the eighth house, right? We can transform, we can change, we can transmute. Yeah, I love that. Aw.
Warning to my partner, I won't be happy till Christmas Day. So hand me that roast beast. Just kidding.
At least you have a cutoff for your angst. Mine has no end. I don't know when mine's going to end. So
I don't know. I plan on starting drinking Thursday night. So I think I'll be fine.
yeah. Once I start drinking, I need to start drinking more. It's true. I don't drink enough. I really
pick
don't.
All my comfy,
really
cute outfits for Christmas. Get a glass of wine
nice.
And just cruise through till Christmas Day.
Yep.
When I cut in that to the Christmas brisket, because that's how I do it.
And that area between like December 26th to January 1st is also a little more 12th house, but also kind of 8th house. Because like, what the fuck even happens then? Like, I can't tell you what I ever was doing from December 26th until January 1st. It's just like
that's a blank just summer. Our American like, Christmas raisings. All the stories we've been talking about and all the spooky things I talk about, they have a lot of stuff in early December, but a lot of them go from like the 26th to like the 6th of January.
Yeah, but not for us. I mean, I
then
just,
you need to like marry a European guy, and then y'all can do the full Christmas shebang and then get wild with it for the European stuff, man.
Yeah, I'm going to get on European Tinder and be like, listen, I'm just looking for plants every year from the 26th to the 31st. So, do you have any cats that can eat me or anything?
How do you feel about Jólakötturinn, the Icelandic Christmas cat?
Yeah, that's all my Tinder profile says. That's it. Oh,
well,
I
don't worry.
I
after your topic, I'll have something really nice to say about Pear Fouettard.
Okay, perfect. Okay, well, my topics, two kind of short ones.
Do it.
Yeah.
Transform my energy from shitty to pink.
Mine aren't so transformative. You know, I was looking for like deep Christmas love, that kind of stuff, but
That's good too.
I couldn't really find it. Besides like, I couldn't find like any story of like an actual deep transformative Christmas love. But what I could find were two very funny things, getting back to the like affair, hidden energy of the 8th house. This article, which really, really made me laugh. You know the song, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus?
Yes. Love it.
Yeah. So first of all, I didn't know that a 14-year-old that sang that and that like started his career, which was – went down that tangent for a minute. But this article really, really made me laugh because there are so many kids that are like, you know, I thought that song was about an affair. Like, why is mommy kissing Santa Claus? All this kind of stuff. So I'm just going to read this little article. Made me laugh. We need to talk about the 1952 novelty hit, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Written by Tommy Connor and recorded by, he was 13, 13-year-old Jimmy Boyd, the song shot to the top of the Billboard chart and has remained a holiday staple ever since, with covers from the likes of Jackson 5, the Ronettes, and John Mellencamp. John Mellencamp did a cover of that?
I'm looking it up. Continue.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Sorry, I don't remember reading that the first time I read this, and that just hit me like a bolt of
maybe
thunder. Mellencamp
changed on you like mine did for no reason.
Maybe it did, but wow. Oh, wow. Okay, sorry. They all became hits. Did the Mellencamp one? Because I don't remember it. I have heard the song dozens, if not hundreds of times. Here's the first verse. I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. She didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peep. She thought that I was tucked up in my bedroom fast asleep. What exactly is going on here? I have several possible theories. Theory number one, mommy and daddy like to get freaky. While I had always assumed that the Santa in question was actually daddy in costume, some questions arise. For whose benefit is the costume? Is this a role play situation? An effort to keep the spark alive in the marriage? More power to them. But how likely is this as a subject matter in a 1952 song? Does daddy keep this costume all year long for a brief Christmas Eve kiss and tickle? Does Santa make appearances other times of the year? This is going back to when I looked up the stuff and got the Christmas porn, right? You better keep that suit ready, baby. The song was released between two landmark Kinsey reports, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, 1948, and Sexual Behavior in the Human Female, 1953. Society was just beginning to open up about the full spectrum of sexual activity transformation. So it feels unlikely this would be the subtext of a novelty song sung by a child. Yeah, I don't think that's what it was about. For what it's worth, this is the interpretation taken by the 2001 made-for-TV movie based on the song starring Dylan and Cole Sprouse. This is anything. I know. Theory number two, which also I got to look into that. What is that movie? If it's about Santa role playing, unhinged, and I need to figure that out. But
all I know is they were the kid that was in Big Daddy that says, I wipe my own ass.
Really?
Yeah, that's the kid. They're twins, and they played the same character so that they could take turns or whatever.
Oh, that's really funny. Well,
yeah.
I'll have to look into this at some point.
But I'm glad I could tell you the I wipe my own ass kid was who you just referenced.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Wow. Learning so much. Theory number two. It's really Santa and mommy hasn't felt this alive in years. Which it really is Santa. I know. And if so,
I feel like you should get Daddy? A hall pass on that one. He's a mythical creature. Sure. You're going to get upset with
for
me?
Sure.
Calm down.
Everybody, I think everyone should get one celebrity pass and one mythical creature pass. That's just for you.
I'm just, yeah. It's unspoken, but I feel like it's a thing.
I wouldn't make Santa mine, though. That wouldn't be the one.
Girl.
Who would be the one?
It would be if it's David Harbour playing Santa.
Who's David Okay, you know what? We can't go down this tangent.
I will pause it right now and text you a picture.
Okay. Okay. Just text me a picture. I'll see it. What if it really is Santa? And if so, where's Daddy? It's not hard to imagine a scenario where Daddy is off at the bar, perhaps Martini's, the Bedford Falls bar from It's a Wonderful Life that seemed to have booming Christmas Eve business, leaving mommy alone to put the kids to bed and stew by the fire. It's that feminine Christmas rage, right, Tiff? Is it any surprise then that the arrival of a true provider in a sharp red suit down the chimney provokes romantic stirrings? It's so deeply wrong. This moment of passion between neglected wife and rotund immortal elf, but also it's so right. Yeah, it is. Theory number three. Santa is real and mommy and daddy like to get freaky. Upon seeing this embrace, Tommy sings, "Oh, what a laugh it would have been if daddy had only seen mommy kissing Santa Claus that night. Daddy likes to watch, apparently." So that made me laugh.
Aw, the Christmas cuck.
The Christmas cuck. Yeah, exactly. Aw, it's a little Christmas cuck. And then that's also special. Found, yeah, it's so special, so heartwarming. So I'm actually not going to get into this because this just timing wise, but I also found this and I'll post it, which I actually have to remember to post this stuff that I say I'm going to post. But I did find this other hilarious article about, it was like an Onion type thing about,
oh God, yes.
Yeah, about Santa and Mrs. Claus getting divorced because Santa was having an affair with the Easter Bunny. Amazing. It's actually funnier than it sounds. The article was great.
A scandalo.
El scandalo. But yeah, those hidden things. Hidden things in the 8th house. I wish I could have found like a transformative love, but no, instead we just got the Christmas cuck.
It's true. Look at the picture I sent you of David Harbour dressed as Santa.
Okay.
And hold on. And tell me that man doesn't have elite riz. Just sex
What's
appeal.
Riz mean?
Kind of like
is sex riz appeal. Sex appeal?
Kind of, yeah. It's just like a
whole who thing. Is he? He's the dude from
Stranger Things. He's the sheriff.
Yeah.
He's hot. Okay, that's fine. More for me.
I mean, it's not like not hot. I'm not like gross, but this isn't like
But him as Santa. All right, you and I are just going to
take. Yeah, I mean, if he came, if
hotter
he came
and
down
hotter
my chimney,
Santas.
Okay, if he came down my chimney and like the option was to fuck him or to not fuck him, like yeah, I'd fuck him, but it wouldn't be like, oh wow, oh my goodness, I don't know, it's just not my thing. Okay, but we gotta get on with the episode. We can't just sit here looking at hot Santas.
But we could pause it.
We can pause it and send some stuff.
Don't worry, I'm gonna work my editing magic later, and then
okay,
all the unhinged, unuseful parts will be gone, but the funny unhinged parts are staying.
Okay, well now that in that case, I want to look up sexy Santa.
So, have you heard of Father Whipper? Speaking of sexy Santa,
stop it! No, what is?
That's what that means.
Father Whipper.
That's what pair for tar means. That thing I sent you from Wiki that I was doing.
Oh my god.
Trust me when I say you're going to feel bad for laughing like in a couple seconds.
Okay, but actually that's also perfect too, because BDSM also falls squarely into the eighth house. So Father Whipper, let's go. Boom. Let's go.
Unfortunately. Le Père Fouettard, the French Christmas cannibal who serves Santa Claus.
Oh, the French cannibal? Oh, shit. This is not going where I thought it was going to go. Okay. All right.
Jingle my bells. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, jingle my bells. Fry them up, I guess.
All right. Père Fouettard, the French Christmas cannibal who serves as Santa Claus. Santa Claus has become the dominant international figure of the holiday season. He might as well be deemed the headline act, but the characters arose from a synthesis of historic folk and religious traditions stretching back hundreds of years. Not thousands and thousands, just hundreds and thousands. This time. Yeah, I know. Just hundreds this time, guys.
Yeah.
There's a mind-boggling number of variations on the character throughout history, and barely any country opted for the same iteration or set of customs. One of the craziest, without a doubt, is Northern and Eastern France's Le Père Fouettard, or Father Whipper. A sort of anti-Santa. Across December and into January, a host of traditions continue while not exactly flying in the face of what has become a largely secularized form. Santa Claus nor St. Nicholas has anything to do with the nativity story, but very much invested in their own region's take on the rites of winter, gift-giving, and folkloric heritage. Ironically, perhaps, our Yuletide story begins in Turkey. For one very important date in the run-up to Christmas is the Feast of St. Nicholas, 270 to 343 AD, on 6th of December. Born to Greek parents on the southern coast at Patara, 4th century bishop of Myra became known and venerated as the patron saint and protector of children. Across Europe, traditions that have monstrous beings accompany St. Nicholas on his rounds, either as mismatched buddy cop movie pairings, Krampus, Knight Rupert, Smoltzy, or as standalone villains such as Austria's witch, Frau Perchta, and Iceland's feline menace, Jalkaturin. Holler at your girl Bjork for more information.
Yeah.
Like mobsters doing their best dirty work, Krampus and Le Père Fouettard set out on the cold, cold December night to deal with the kids who have been naughty. They're more likely to deck the halls with holly boughs than boughs of holly. Forget kindly elves or a jolly fat man with great big bushy beard, red-nosed reindeer, and magical slaves. Children are given a choice, presents, or a sound beating with a bag of ashes. And as one strand of the tale goes, if you've given too much lip to your folks over the year or don't say your prayers, it's possible an evisceration is all you've got to look forward to. As coercion tactics go, it's better than the carrot and stick method, but this one basically terrifies you into being good. In Nord-Pas-de-Calais, Lorraine, and southern Belgium, Wallonia, on the night of 5 December, St. Nicholas leaves chocolates and sweets and shoes for ones who have been said their prayers and been good to their parents and done their homework all year round. While Krampus and Black Peter, which he will come up on another episode, have featured in recent movies 2015's Krampus, 2010's Stint. And the story of Le Père Fouettard is a whole nother level of crazy and vicious. Not many seasonal tales center on cannibalism, infanticide, and zombie kids, but this one does. So Wahoo. How does a creep... I know. Just jump straight off. So how does a creepy figure with a creepier name like Father Whipper fit into the St. Nicholas tradition? There are several origin stories that have become popularized. One is entirely apocryphal, and the other is perhaps fictional, but it has roots in a 16th century medieval siege in the city of Metz. Both are medieval in origin. The first, which started to be told around 1150, involves an evil butcher who kidnapped three lost children, murdered them by slitting their throats, and carved the meat to put into a salting tub. Alas, St. Nicholas turned up at the door and the butcher attempted to integrate himself to his saintly visitor by offering him his best meat. Instead, St. Nicholas resurrected the boys from the dead and sends them back to their parents. Seeing an opportunity for the... I know. Yikes.
Told you St. Nick was one of the good guys.
He's one of the good ones.
He's one of the good guys.
Seeing an opportunity for the butcher to repent his sins, the butcher became Father Whipper, a sort of eternal servant who basically acts as bad cop to St. Nicholas's good cop. Another interesting variant on Father Whipper relates to the 1552 to 53 siege of Metz. Part of the war between France's Henry II and the Holy Roman Empire. The fighting lasted from 1551 till 59, and during the festive period, locals decided to burn an effigy of the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V and dragged it through the streets. A group of tanners created Father Whipper character and based his physical appearance on the burnt effigy. So, why does the Sade-like name Father Whipper? La Père Fouettard is often depicted or described as a disheveled-looking brute in black robes, or either a black or red beard, who carries a martinet, a scourge-style whip, ready to dole out beatings to naughty kids. He looks like something from a horror movie and is very much the stuff of nightmares. But really, it's the idea of not getting gifts from St. Nicholas, which is the overriding emotion. Imagine how you'd feel if you got a lump of coal and all your friends are in the grip of a sweet sugar rush. There's cultural and social religious through the line, and all these folk traditions toe the line. So maybe just say your prayers, be good to your parents, and you'll be rewarded. If not, you better watch out.
Yeah, a lot of kids are getting eaten by people or cats or mythical creatures over in Europe. So maybe I won't add that to my Tinder, to my non-existent Tinder profile.
It doesn't say anything about French women having a bad time. It's just the kids.
That's true. I'm not a kid anymore, so Father Whipper can't come get me. Yep, it's back on. I need something to do between December 26th and January 1st. So
It's back on.
That's intense. It's really intense.
It is intense. I was really struggling with who to talk about for this episode because I was like, who is got a good yikes meter?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty yikes for sure. Just to let you know, I was scrolling through Santa pictures and I feel like we should put up on the page, like, pick the hottest Santa, because there's actually a ton of them. But did you know John Hamm played Santa? Because John Hamm is my type. Ugh. I love the John Hamm.
Funny. Because sometimes I see him and I'm just like, okay, that's nice, I guess.
It's honestly not even so much the way he looks. Like, I do think he's sexy and I do think he's good looking, but he's so funny. Like,
yeah.
If you ever see him in interviews or like, he's just like I'm more into personality than I am to looks anyway. Obviously, like, I'm attracted to looks, but like, he's a good looking dude. And then when you add his personality on top of it, like, I'm like smitten kitten. So.
And apparently he likes to run around with like no underwear on, because there's a lot of pictures of his ham candle.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, he's also packing the heat, so that doesn't hurt either.
Packing the heat. I found that out by pure accident, and I was like, what is going on?
Well, me too. I mean, I found it out by pure accident, too. I wasn't, like, sitting on my computer like, John Hamm's dick. Like, a picture came up on Reddit or something that was like, John Hamm's in sweatpants.
Show me your browser history.
I know, right? I want records back to 2016. No, I really wasn't. But I'm not saying I didn't search for more.
Kate's on Google going, does John's ham candle have a girth certificate? She just did.
Oh, my God, a girth certificate. Oh, God, that's so funny. Oh, God, I think we all know what I'm going to be Googling the minute I get off this recording. I am going to go down a John Hamm's girth certificate vortex. Yeah, I need to see more of that. I need to see more of that ham bone, if you know what I mean.
So I think now's a great time to say happy holidays. Good night.
Merry Christmas, 8th house.